Chapter 11. Her curiosity was so widely awakened by the phenomenon that she sat up in bed and stared steadily at the shine. An appearance of this sort, sufficient to excite attention anywhere, was no less than a marvel in Intok, as Grace had known the hamlet. Almost every diurnal and nocturnal effect in that woodland place had hitherto been the direct result of the regular terrestrial role which produced the season's changes. But here was something dissociated from these normal sequences, and foreign to local habit and knowledge. It was about this moment that Grace heard the household below preparing to retire, the most emphatic noise in the proceeding being that of her father bolting the doors. Then the stairs creaked, and her father and mother passed her chamber. The last to come was Grammer Oliver. Grace slid out of bed, ran across the room, and lifting the latch, said, "I am not asleep, Grammer. Come in and talk to me." Before the old woman had entered, Grace was again under the bedclothes. Grammer set down her candlestick, and seated herself on the edge of Miss Melberry's coverlet. "I want you to tell me what light that is I see on the hillside," said Grace. Mrs. Oliver looked across. "H, that," she said, "is from the doctors. He's often doing things of that sort. Perhaps you don't know that we've a doctor living here now, Mr. Fitzpiers by name?" Grace admitted that as he had not heard of him. "Well then, miss, he's come here to get up a practice. I know him very well, through going there to help him scrub sometimes, which your father said I might do, if I wanted to, in my spare time. Being a bachelor man, he've only a lad in the house. Oh yes, I know him very well. Sometimes he'll talk to me, as if I were his own mother." "Indeed." "Yes. Grammer, apostrophe," he said one day, when I asked him why he came here, "where there's hardly anybody living, I'll tell you why I came here. I took a map, and I marked on it where Dr. Jones' practice ends to the north of this district, and where Mr. Taylor's ends on the south, and little Jimmy Green's on the east, and somebody else's to the west. Then I took a pair of compasses, and found the exact middle of the country that was left between these bounds, and that middle was little Intok, so here I am. But, Lord, there! Poor young man! Why?" He said, "Grammer Oliver, I've been here 3 months, and although there are a good many people in the Intoks and the villages round, and a scattered practice is often a very good one, I don't seem to get many patients. And there's no society at all, and I'm pretty near melancholy mad," apostrophe he said, with a great yawn. "I should be quite if it were not for my books, and my laboratory, and whatnot. Grammer, I was made for higher things," apostrophe, and then he'd yawn and yawn again. Was he really made for higher things, do you think? I mean, is he clever? Well, no. How can he be clever? He may be able to jine up a broken man or woman after a fashion, and put his finger upon an ache, if you tell him nearly where it is. But these young men, they should live to my time of life, and then they'd see how clever they were at 25. And yet he's a project, a real project, and says the oddest of rosums. Ah, Grammer, apostrophe he said, "at another time, let me tell you, that everything is nothing. There's only me, and not me in the whole world. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he told me that no man's hands could help what they did, any more than the hands of a clock. Yes, he's a man of strange meditations, and his eyes seem to see as far as the North Star. He will soon go away, no doubt." "I don't think so." Grace did not say hi, and Grammer hesitated. At last she went on, "Colin, don't tell your father or mother, miss, if I let you know a secret." Grace gave the required promise. "Well, he talks of buying me, so he won't go away just yet." "Buying you? How?" "Not my soul, my body, when I'm dead. One day when I was there cleaning, he said, 'Grammer, you've a large brain, a very large organ of brain,' apostrophe he said. 'A woman's is usually 4 ounces less than a man's, but yours is man's size.' Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, then he, After he'd flattered me a bit like that, he said he'd give me £10 to have me as a natomy after my death. Well, knowing I'd no chick nor chill left, and nobody with any interest in me, I thought, faith, if I can be of any use to my fellow creatures after I'm gone, they are welcome to my services. So I said I'd think it over, and would most likely agree, and take the £10. Now this is a secret, miss, between us two. The money would be very useful to me, and I see no harm in it. Of course there's no harm. But oh, Grammer, how can you think to do it? I wish you hadn't told me. I wish I hadn't, if you don't like to know it, miss. But you needn't mind. Lord he. I shall keep him waiting many a year yet, bless ye. I hope he will, I am sure. The girl thereupon fell into such deep reflection that conversation languished, and Grammer Oliver, taking her candle, wished Miss Melberry good night. The latter's eyes rested on the distant glimmer, around which she allowed her reasoning fancy to play in vague eddies that shaped the doings of the philosopher behind that light on the lines of intelligence just received. It was strange to her to come back from the world to Little Hintock and find in one of its nooks, like a tropical plant in a hedgerow, a nucleus of advanced ideas and practices which had nothing in common with the life around. Chemical experiments, anatomical projects, and metaphysical conceptions had found a strange home here. Thus she remained thinking, the imagined pursuits of the man behind the light intermingling with conjectural sketches of his personality, till her eyes fell together with their own heaviness, and she slept. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.